I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Ballot Talks on Radio Times. There's a mayoral primary this spring in Philadelphia. A number of city council members are running for re-election, and so the race for campaign funds is underway. Philadelphia's city code instituted limits on contributions to candidates after a pay-to-play scandal that led to five convictions in 2005, including of a former city treasurer. This section limits contributions from law firms and corporations who do business with the city. These had been major sources of money for candidates in Philadelphia before this reform, and now some are complaining that the limits are causing problems, are even undemocratic. And that's what we will be talking about in this edition of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. And let me introduce our two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Dan Fee is head of the Democratic political consulting firm called the Echo Group, has consulted on a number of campaigns, including ones for Ed Rendell, John Street, Seth Williams, Seamus McCaffrey. Dan Fee, it's been a while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is David Thornburg. He's CEO of the government reform group called Committee of 70. Prior to that, he was the executive director of the Fells Institute of Government at the University of Pennsylvania. It's been a number of years as well. David Thornburg, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
We're going to begin with the wonkiest way that I possibly know how to begin this discussion. We're talking about Rule 17-1405 of the City Code. What do our listeners need to know about that, David?
Well, that has to do with the attribution limits as they relate to the laws that were put in place to limit so-called pay-to-play. Essentially makes it much more difficult to make a contribution and still to a certain limit and still be eligible to receive a no-bid piece of business, a contract from the city. And this, you know, the history of this, of course, goes back to ultimately the race of 2003. And what we learned after the race was, I think, a culture of corruption in City Hall that resulted in 27 convictions and guilty pleas and some notable figures going to jail. So that's the context and a little bit of the detail.
And Dan, we're talking about, in terms of numbers, $2,900 for individual donors that they could give. They can give every year.
Not only can they give every year, but it's actually sort of two different things. There are different limits for PACs,
right,
and then there are different limits for individuals. And individuals can give every year, but the attribution limits are a little bit different. It's about how much people who work or direct or own a company are able to give combined. And those limits will preclude somebody from getting a no-bid contract. You know, I think that there's been a lot of discussion about the attribution limits. I think there's sort of two things to remember about it. One is that doesn't really impact that many firms, right? So we shouldn't get sort of off on a tangent about something that's really sort of a very small issue in a larger discussion.
How many firms would you say, like a handful, five, six, seven?
Fewer than my fingers.
Fewer than your fingers. And you have 10 fingers, right?
I have 8 and 2 thumbs.
Okay, fair enough. Ooh, he got me on that.
Yeah. So, but the second thing is that, you know, when we're talking about attribution limits, the way that they're actually applied, not only does it arguably include someone's spouse. So if I gave funding to somebody and my spouse gave somebody, that would count against the firm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but if people are not in control of the decision making, say I'm a partner at a law firm and my wife and I want to give money, that could arguably preclude the firm from getting work, even though I have no control over the firm. So that's the problem. But I also think that if the problem is no-bid contracts, get rid of no-bid contracts.
I mean, is it as simple as that, David Thornburg?
I would support the idea of tightening down the details of the city contracting, and I think Dan does make a good point. This doesn't exclude people from competitively bid contracts. You know, I think the thing around campaign finance kind of laws and limits is you attack one problem at a time, and you recognize that when you solve one problem, and I would suggest that the laws that came into place after 2003 have solved some problems, but they also open the doors to others. Mm. And I think that's obviously what we're here to talk about. But, you know, it's the continuous pursuit. You know, we're trying to get a clean, efficient, effective government that people trust. And I don't think we'd get any disagreement on that. How we get there is the food of thought for democracy, really.
Indeed. That's why money is so important in these kinds of conversations. Dan, just to go back and make sure, again, our listeners understand, so if we're talking about $2,900 for individual donors, and the PACs are, what, $10,500?
$11,000.
Or $11,500.
Yes.
I saw both those numbers. So $11,500.
Right. Well, they increased it. They increase.
Okay. And that's, per year.
Mm-hmm.
So someone could potentially give, or a PAC could have something like $40,000 over a four-year period.
Plus the individuals. You know, so, I mean, that's where the attribution limits come in
right.
in the question. But, yes, I mean, people can – so if you work at a 500-person law firm, every single person can max out to you, and then the firm can max out to you every single year. So it's not a question of whether there's money. I mean, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still competitively bid for contracts, but you can't get a no-bid contract.
But one of the complaints has been is that these limits are making it hard for people to run for office because they can't raise enough money. Is that true?
That is 100% true, and it's a little bit separate from the attribution limits. But, I mean, I know that, you know, let me just go through a couple of things.
Sure.
There are 9 district council candidates who are running for reelection. Only one of them has a serious challenge, and that's because the challenger is self-funding. You know, when people started announcing for the at-large campaigns, they were explicit. Now that there's an opening that Jim Kenney has resigned, I'm running, because they presumed that they could not win in this other way. There's only been one candidate who has lost, who's won in a regular election, who has lost elections since these have been in, and it was someone who took drop. So, I mean, it's not that we have a system that has really made it fairer or more open, or even more transparent. And that's really the goal of campaign reform. And I think these limits have actually hurt that.
What do you think?
Well, you know, again, sort of go back to what are the problems that we're trying to solve. I think we're very concerned about the impact and the influence of big money. You know, a single person that can write a check for $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever. We are also very concerned, again, in the light of the events of 2003, about breaking the chain of pay to play. That it just should be wrong, and underline that 5 times, and as severe penalties as we could to get a city contract in exchange for a contribution. You know, competitive elections is something that 70s stood for forever. And, you know, I've been in this job for a couple of months and trying to sort of crack the code on how we get there. It does feel to me, I don't think that the limits we have in place limit a candidate's ability to raise money. I think you have to inspire people, mm-hmm. and you got to work really hard. But and I think Michael Nutter showed that in, you know, his at least certainly his first election, that it's possible to do that.
He raised millions of dollars under these restrictions, which, Dan, raises the questions whether if candidates are having problems raising money, maybe they're not the right candidates. And wouldn't you want a candidate to, if you have to raise money, to have that money come from a broad base rather than just a handful of people?
Well, I think there are probably 2 things. One is that there's a lot of evidence that people are having problems raising enough money to do it. And, you know, we shouldn't necessarily take an exception to the rule and say that it proves the rule, you know, because there are many more candidates who have either declined to run or dropped out. And I know, you know, look, whether you support it or not support it, I mean, Terry Gillen had a lot of really interesting things to add to this race. She was very clear that she was dropping out of the race because of funding. I can tell you that I've personally had phone calls from probably 10 to 15 people who wanted to run for council. And the first words out of their mouth were always about how they were going to raise money. And even this on Monday in Philly Voice, there was a really interesting story. And David, you were quoted, and I thought your quotes were great, but about how much time these candidates are actually having to spend raising money. And it keeps them from discussing policy, meeting voters. And is that the system that we want, where someone's sitting in a room raising money?
But are we better off if someone, a well-connected person in Philadelphia, is writing a check for $50,000 or $100,000? Is that better, though?
But, you know, that's still going on right now. You know, so also on Monday, there was a big article in the Philadelphia Daily News written by Tom Farrick about the prevalence of super PACs. We've seen them at the federal level, and now we're seeing them at the city level. The money hasn't gone away. What we've done is we've removed responsibility for it. Where before, if you wrote me a $50,000 check, I would have to answer questions about it. Now, you can write $50,000 checks to someone else. They can spend on my behalf. I'm not responsible for it, and you don't care. So where's the responsibility? That's part of the disclosure and the responsibility around around campaigns. You're responsible for who supports you.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, there are a couple things going on here, and, you know, these are great issues. You know, one is at least and we may play this out and see what it looks like in 2015. It's interesting to me to think about what a lower spending campaign, say, for mayor actually looks like. And is that a major threat to democracy? I mean, there's a longstanding line out there that, you know, money is the mother's milk of campaigns. I know that. I get that. I know these folks are competitors. But I'm not sure massive spending on TV, particularly negative TV advertising, really inspires us, turns people out, and is better for us all around. So, you know, I guess that's one thing. Second is I think, you know, I do think that the limits do level the playing field, and I do think it's possible to raise to raise enough money to run a competitive campaign, given what we have.
So, what do you say to those candidates to say, I can't operate under these limits?
Why are you running for office? Oh. We're not here to talk about sort of the idea side of the equation, I guess. But
nothing wrong with ideas. Well, go ahead.
This in addition to this conversation about contributions, I'm comparing this to other elections. I'm feeling a notable lack of kind of inspiring ideas about how this candidate or the other will, and that I don't think that's related to money. There's something else going on there that we ought to be concerned about.
Well, I'd like to have you respond to that, Dan.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you want to look at what an election without money looks like, you can simply look at any of the, you know, the DA's races or the controller's races. There's very low turnout and very low voter engagement. You know, I mean, I think in one of them we had something like 11% turnout.
But do you think that would be true for a mayor's race in Philadelphia?
It might be a little bit higher. But, you know, I mean, this year's race, I bet you will have lower turnout than 2007.
Because not enough money is being spent?
Well, but see, there you can't disconnect them, right? Like, so, you know, if people now are spending so much time raising money that they can't be out there discussing ideas. It also prevents people who may have different ideas from getting in the race because they know they can't. What we did was we took away the way to fund races, or limited the way to fund races, but we didn't get rid of any of the expenses of running races. We really only looked at one side of the ledger, and I think part of the issue is that we're conflating government reform, ethics reform, and campaign reform, right? It is incredibly important to stop corruption, but that is ethics and government reform. Campaign reform is about making sure that candidates, no matter who they are or no matter what their ideas are, at least have an equal opportunity. We've set up a system in which they really don't.
Well, we have to take a very short break. I know you want to say something, David Thornburg, and we are talking about money in politics, money in campaigns, ethics. And our guests are Dan Fee. He's head of the Democratic political consulting firm, the Echo Group. Also with us, David Thornburg. He's CEO of the Government Reform Committee, or group, I should say, here in Philadelphia called Committee of 70. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and we have Terry Gillen waiting in the wings. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times, talking with Dan Fee and David Thornburg about limits on contributions here in Philadelphia, those limits put in place after a pay-to-play scandal. And joining us now is Terry Gillen, former candidate for mayor of Philadelphia, was the executive director of the Redevelopment Authority of Philadelphia. That was 2008 to 2011. She was also a member of Michael Nutter's 2007 campaign for mayor. And Terry Gillen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You have been quoted as saying you dropped out of the mayor's race because you could not raise enough money. How come?
I think both Dan and David have identified some of the issues. So let me say this is a national problem, and every city's trying to figure out a way to deal with it. We are seeing nationally less money going to candidates and to parties, and more money going into PACs. And so some of campaign finance reform issues are bigger than what we can solve in Philly. But I do think there are things that the city can do, and we can talk about that.
Sure.
I also think that there were other factors. So whereas I do agree that the attribution rules are a factor, what I would say is that they were in place in 07, and I don't think they were as big a factor as some of the other things that were in place this year. So one issue this year was that I think there was some donor fatigue from the governor's race. We had a very competitive primary, Democratic primary, and we had a competitive Democratic primary in one of our congressional races, Alison Schwartz's old seat.
Sure.
So there was a lot of donor fatigue and focus on that up until the summer. I think one of the issues was that the field was very fluid, and actually the mayoral field continues to be fluid. And donors really like the field to be set before they give money. And many, many people said to me, well, I'll talk to you after I know who's running. Daryl Clark spent a lot of time talking about possibly getting in. And so I think when you have a fluid field, that's a problem. In 07, the field was pretty set in the fall. So I think that's a factor. I think this year, there definitely were lesser known names getting into the mayor's race. That's why some of us thought it was an opportunity. But there's no question that in 07, you had two members of Congress. You had Dwight Evans, who had run for mayor before. So you had bigger names in 07 than you did this year. And then I would also suggest that 07 was pre-recession and we're post-recession. And some people just have less money. It was easier for some people to write a $1,000 check or $2,900, $2,500 check in 07 than it is this year. So I think there are a lot of factors at play, and I think that as we think about what we're going to do to reform the system going forward, we have to be really careful that we focus on all of the factors.
Well, and Terry, let me give our guests a chance to respond to your analysis, both of your own campaign but also looking across the field. And to you, Dan, does that make sense to you?
It 100% does. But I also think that, the last thing that Terry said is probably the most important, which is that we do have to look at this sort of as an ecosystem, so that there are a lot of different causes, but we shouldn't confuse government reform versus ethics reform and campaign reform, right? They are related, but they're different puzzles. And what we keep trying to do is take pieces from each of them and make them fit. So there are a lot of moving pieces to it. But if we want elections to be more competitive and more transparent, there's no way to argue that our current system is doing that.
But are you also saying let's have transparency, let's have all the disclosure and take off all the limits?
Well, I'm saying two things. One is I'm saying we should have more disclosure. And I'm saying that the problem isn't inherently the inherent problem is not giving money. The problem is the problem is when people give government contracts for it or government benefit for it, right? Like if I give you $1,000 and you give me a contract, we should both go to jail. If I give you $25,000 and we don't do anything, mm-hmm. Well, that's great. You got $25,000. So the problem is the corruption. That's what we should focus on, but we're penalizing the other side.
And David, one of the arguments I've heard in favor of these limits is that we haven't had the kind of pay-to-play scandal that was the reason for the limits in the first place, so that the system is working. Can we say that?
Yeah, and I think Dan paints this picture of these sort of separate universes called government and campaigns and ethics, but the reality is they do have a lot to each other, lots to do with each other. The only way you get to be in government is to get elected in the course of a campaign. And again, the link that we were trying to break was coming out of 2003 was the pay-to-play scandal, which I have to say, for some bizarre reason, I spent my Christmas Day this year watching the documentary Shame of a City, which ruined my Christmas.
I can only imagine.
But it just reminded me, and it should remind us of like how bad this was, and how dispiriting, and how much justifiably how much trust we lost in our public officials, and we had to do something. So I do think we have succeeded in breaking the link or weakening the link at least between campaign spending and awarding government contracts in the city.
Right. I'm not arguing that we shouldn't be fighting corruption. We should, mm-hmm. as tooth and nail. What I'm arguing is that there are better ways to stop corruption that don't make our elections less fair and less transparent. It is an ecosystem. I 100% agree. But what I'm saying is that when you take an impact, when you do something over here, it has an impact over there. But they didn't sort of account for that impact, and they didn't take care of the other things that are also part of it.
Terry, let me go back to you and doing a little homework for this program. These limitations have been hailed, maybe more in the past than today, but hailed by government reformers saying, look at what Philadelphia did to try to address this problem of pay-to-play or government corruption, and hailing this really as a model that the rest of the country should look for or perhaps even model for themselves. Is that overstated? Does that seem right? Is it time to revisit this?
I think in 07 it was absolutely the case, Marty. There's no question, Michael Nutter would not have been elected, I would argue, without campaign finance limits. Other candidates in the race had the ability to raise $100,000 at a time, and then Councilman Nutter probably didn't. So I do think that Philadelphia was a national example of how campaign finance limits, I think, really do lead to a reform candidate being able to get elected. It's always good to revisit rules. I think other cities are doing things that we should be looking at. So, for example, since 07, we've had this Supreme Court case, Citizens United, which loosens the rules on super PACs. And so there are other cities like New York that now have matching funds for campaigns, so that if you're a small donor, you get a match. And that encourages candidates to focus more on small donors, and it's an attempt by New York to try to limit the impact of large money. So I think whereas the 2007 race, yes, we were a national model. I think there's lots that we can be learning from other cities now.
Let me give you a chance to respond, and you as well, Dan. Go ahead.
Let me just pick up on Terry's thread. I mean, the good news about this kind of patchwork system that we have in this country we call federalism and the way we run elections, there's always a lot to learn from the way other folks do things. And if we keep our eye on the ball, and this is, again, sort of a core value for the Committee of 70, we want competitive elections. We want men and women of talent and promise and integrity to get in the game and have a fair shot. And we have to constantly be looking around, not just within, campaign finance things, but other things about how we conduct elections. I mean, it's lost on us that, there are people out there doing things like, same-day primaries or online registration or, open primaries where you don't have to declare. Let's let the games begin. Let's look at all of those things and see how they can get us towards more competitive elections.
Dan, I have to say to our listeners and also to Terry that you were shaking your head as she was talking about what New York was doing. But how do you empower smaller donors
now? Well, I was shaking my head because the matching funds in New York are not in any way related to the Citizens United decision.
Okay.
I mean, that's just not correct. They've been doing it for years and years and years, and they have like a 5-to-1 match. What it did is it made it unimportant in New York, but it's not in any way connected to it. So, I mean, that part's just not correct. But it's a good example to use because they basically what it does is it allows every candidate. Well, another thing that I would add to your list, David, is that we shouldn't have petitions, right? Every year we have people who spend money to go petitions. And then the right of spring is people trying to knock them off, whether it's what happened to Congressman Brady in 2009 or Seth Williams. Seth Williams in 2009 or Congressman Brady in 2007. The point was solely to drain their bank account. They knew they weren't going to knock them off. We should just get rid of them. But what happens in New York is that people get on the ballot. They raise a certain amount, small dollars, and then they get a 5-to-1 match, and then they're capped. Michael Bloomberg, because he was wealthy, didn't participate in that. But that's why Bill de Blasio won. He had enough money, and it's because he raised small dollars with matchings. But it's not in any way related to Citizens United.
Yeah.
Let me just reintroduce all three of you. That's Dan Fee. He's head of the Democratic political consulting firm here in Philadelphia, the Echo Group. Also with us, David Thornburg, CEO, I should say new CEO of the Government Reform Group Committee of 70, also here in Philadelphia. And Terry Gillen joining us by telephone. She ran for mayor, or she was considering running for mayor in the primary, former candidate for mayor of Philadelphia. She dropped out for a host of reasons, including the fact that she was unable to raise enough money. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What are your ideas for reform? And that's what we're talking about in this hour of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I mean, it does almost sound like an argument from all three of you, and I'll toss this first to you, Terry, which is to figure out how to have some kind of public financing of campaigns. I don't know if that's a solution or not, but is that one that we should at least consider?
Marty, I absolutely think we should consider it. Dan's right. New York had it before Citizens United, but there are other places, such as I think Montgomery County, Maryland, who's just started a public financing plan. So I do think you're seeing lots of localities looking at matching funds or public financing, some form of public financing, as part of the solution. And, you know, as I said earlier, there's no question that this is a national problem, and it would be great if Congress or the U.S. Supreme Court would fix it. But I don't think they're going to anytime soon, so I think then it's incumbent on cities and states to figure it out. And I do think that some form of public financing should be on the table as a solution.
What do you think, David?
Well, I'm not ready to sign off on that. I think you want to have a lot of room in the system for internet, for individual initiative and energy and drive. Like, you got to want it, and you got to be able to convince people that you're the right man or woman for the job. A couple other things. Dan and I had a little pregame talk before we get on. You know, he's talked about, you know, one of the buckets of issues here is corruption,
right?
And and that we need to have severe and timely and distinct, meaningful penalties when you break the law. And as I've come to learn some of this stuff the last couple months, it strikes me that I don't think our the penalties around campaign finance limits or other pieces of this necessarily meet that test. If you treat it as just sort of a cost of doing business, if you can blow through the limits and pay a little fine long after the dust has settled, that's not having the effect. So I'm all for that, and I think Dan would agree.
Yeah, in fact, you have a piece. I don't know if it's going to run on Newsworks, or I got an advanced copy of it, and you're having it in your hands. Is there?
Actually, what I grabbed was the Philadelphia Board of Regulations of Campaign Finance, because it does talk about the penalties. And they're incredibly low. You know, what we do need to do is we need greater disclosure. We need more regular disclosure, right?
Timely.
Timely, right? Over a certain amount, you have to disclose. Fine. You have to disclose more regularly. Right now, it's the next one is sometime in April, so it'll be December 31st to April. That's a long time when the primary's in May. We should increase those things. But we should have severe penalties, and right now we really don't. So I just pulled just one page out of this. But if you accept an excess of excess contributions on page 23 of their things, it is – shall be subject to a civil penalty of 3 times the amount by which the accepted contribution exceeded the limit, or $2,000, whichever is less.
Whichever is less.
That's just the cost of doing business.
Enough.
Yeah, it's like a tax, but it's not a meaningful one.
Right. And we're not funding the people who actually investigate these things to a high enough level.
But is part of the problem is that we don't have a working definition of corruption. I mean, if people, you know, is corruption bribery? Is corruption something lesser than that? Go ahead, Dan.
Well, yeah, and so I wanted to point that out. So we've been talking a lot about campaign finance as if campaign finance is sort of always connected to corruption, and it's really not. There are sort of two things I'd like to highlight. Corey Kemp, who was the treasurer,
right,
who went to jail,
right,
not connected to campaign finance. He just took a bunch of payoffs, right? And that's corruption. And penalties should be severe, and for Corey, they were. The second thing is that Dave Davies from WHYY, I thought, wrote a really interesting piece at the end of this year, of last year, about how Philadelphia continues to have corruption problems. But his story doesn't talk about anybody having campaign finance corruption problems, right? At any level, they were all really all about, you know, sort of like government use of funds.
Which you said, well, and you're trying to put things in boxes.
Just to broaden the lens a little bit, and I haven't done the sort of analysis on this, but if you look at the state level in the last 10 years, it seems to me like most of the corruptions, charges, indictments, and convictions have been around campaign violations, and often around campaign finance violations. So it, it and partly it is because it's harder to do the stuff we used to get away with, you know, hire your brother-in-law or shovel a contract to your friends and neighbors and so forth. So I'm not sure that those links are as kind of frayed.
I mean, we're having this conversation, after, as I mentioned before, going on the air right after Rob McCord, and this is part of his campaign, was trying to strong-arm people to raise money so that he could be governor of Pennsylvania.
Right, but what Rob pled guilty to was a crime. It would have been a crime if the limits were $1. Right. I mean, so we shouldn't take something and say because something is already a crime, we need to have more laws. What we need is to have, you know, more detection of that and stiffer penalties. I mean, Rob's got a real problem, but what he did was a crime. It was a crime before. It would be a crime with limits. It's not that he was just giving contracts. He was threatening people. That's a crime regardless. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't – it's not that I think that they're disconnected. What I'm saying is that we have taken something that was supposed to take care of one problem. And I would argue that maybe it didn't, but I know it's had this outside impact.
Let me give Terry, because we have to say goodbye here. Let me give you just a minute or so, Terry, just to respond to what we've been talking about. Then we will have to say goodbye.
Sure. I'll just make two quick points.
Sure.
I completely agree with both Dan and David that the enforcement, the detection, and the penalties for violating campaign laws are too small and too easy in Philadelphia. We need to fund either the Board of Ethics or some other entity to be able to pick up on campaign finance violations, and penalties should be severe, and they're not. So there's no question that that has to be part of the solution. I do think, though, that to use the Rob McCord example, where these two things come together is the more money you can donate to a candidate, the more incentive the candidate has to put pressure on you. And I'll just leave it at that. So I think if all someone can give you is $2,900 versus they can give you $100,000, you're just going to have different behaviors as a result of that. And that is where I think the two of them come together. And there are no limits at the state level. So I think you see a lot of this corruption that people have talked about coming from state officials because there are no limits at the state.
Well, Terry, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
And Terry Gillen, former candidate for mayor of Philadelphia, in fact, was the executive director of the Redevelopment Authority of Philadelphia from 08 to 2011. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation with David Thornburg and Dan Fee. Looks like we have folks that want to join our conversation as well, talking about campaigns, elections, money reform. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscowain. When we talk about all things election-related, and our guests are David Thornburg. He's the new CEO of the Government Reform Group Committee of 70 here in Philadelphia, and Dan Fee. He's the head of the Democratic political consulting firm called the Echo Group. And I do want to get to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. You can join our conversation by also sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can post something on our Facebook page, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Dan, have these restrictions made it harder for you to make a living? And by that, I mean, this is your bread and butter. This is how you make a living, which is working for campaigns. Has it made it harder for you to get the money that you need to do the work that you want to do?
Well, actually, so this isn't how I make my living. I don't really do any city work, so this really has no impact on me. But I've been working in and around Philadelphia for 15 years now. And what the system we have now, I can't tell you the number of people I've had over the last 6 months who've called me who want to run for office, some really interesting, aggressive people with great histories, great reasons for running, great agendas, who simply, you know, when they go through the process, they go, I simply can't raise enough money to run. And I think that's a shame. But whether there are limits or not really has no impact on me, except as a citizen.
But do you think other people sort of in your line of work, if I can use it that way, that it has made life difficult for them?
Well, you know, I would say two things. One is that most of the people who sort of really make a lot of money on campaigns have simply moved to super PACs. You know, so no, it really hasn't. You know, I do want to go back to this super PAC issue because
sure.
We're sort of – it's not that big money has disappeared. What it has is become unaccountable, right? The candidates know who's donating to them because it's all publicly released, but no one's accountable for it. Right now, I can give $1 million to a super PAC and still get a no-bid contract. Is that the system we want?
Yeah, and this is part. And this is part of our complex way that we fund campaigns. We've got state laws, you've got city laws, you've got the feds.
Yeah. Well, a couple things on that. I mean, sure, there is a sense that campaign finance, money in politics and campaigns is like water running downhill. It'll find a way to get to the bottom. I think the best we can do relative to the super PACs right now is, you know, timely, meaningful transparency. We got to know, and people have to know who's behind these things. And if there's a clear tie to a candidate, even if they haven't, quote, coordinated their efforts, then we got to know that when it comes time to award contracts. And one other thing about this sort of timely transparency thing, it makes me crazy when we don't require disclosure that's electronic and online, because that's another game that you can play. It's, you know, you file a campaign report on paper, you know, a month after the campaign, and nobody cares. We got to get that information in the game when it's meaningful to people and make it accessible and easy for people to digest.
I mean, this is the 21st century, right?
Honestly, where it's just another piece of the game that you're opening up that folks can play, the candidates can play.
Let me see what Jacob from New Brunswick has to say. Not from Philadelphia. Hi, Jacob. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I've agreed with everyone who's been talking on a variety of points. I did hear a point earlier which was brought up about how money in campaigns helps turnout, and that in the lower-funded campaigns, we have a lower turnout. And I'm wondering if maybe that's perhaps the wrong way to look at things. And the way we need to look at it is that high money in politics really limits our choice of candidates, and that is what's limiting our turnout, or partially limiting the turnout. And perhaps looking at other ways of getting the electorate involved besides just having lots and lots of TV ads from two politicians who are basically kind of saying similar things. You know, should we not use that as a reason to have money in politics and say, you know, these limited choices of candidates, this huge money, is not what's engaging people. We need more candidates with more opinions that appeal to a broader group of the electorate. And that will really help turn out. And I'll take my comments off
here. Sure, Jacob. No, thanks for calling. I'm going to toss that first to you, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is sort of the conflict between, you know, sort of the ideology of it or sort of the ideal of it and what we're really facing in reality. And reality is that we have a system in which lower spending races have lower turnout. It's sort of a hallmark.
Is that a cause and effect, though?
Yeah, it really is, actually. And there's all kinds of empirical evidence about it. But if you just want to look at the Philadelphia races, right, mayor's races spend more money. They get higher turnout than DA's and controller races, which don't have the same
sort
of thing.
But isn't it because it's for the mayor of Philadelphia?
No,
because – it's a more high-profile job?
No, not necessarily. It's, you know, because there's president – you know, all of these races – have much more money. Yes, they have broader issues, but part of the reason of the discussion of the issues is because of money, because we have all the same media, right? And they all have the same responsibilities. The difference is money. If you want to have highly engaged, high turnout, there's a lot of evidence that says that money is connected to it.
Talking about Dan's business, but I think that where this is headed, first of all, recognize that about in your average mayor's race, about 80% of the money goes to television.
Right.
I think television is going to be less and less effective in driving turnout and in forming campaigns. I think, you know, and we've seen this, I think this was the game, the ground game that the Obama folks played in 08, 012. I mean, in 12, what they figured out is a much less expensive, much more effective way of reaching voters, this sort of data-driven micro-segmentation targeting, that I think that's the future of the campaigns. And that actually doesn't cost nearly as much as television. So I'm not suggesting that's the story of 2015, but I think that's the story to come.
Does that cost money?
Well, so I guess two things, and I know your next guest will talk about this more than I, but no one spent as much as Barack Obama ever. right? He spent an enormous amount of money. And all of the sort of the data targeting and the GOTV efforts that Obama did was enormously expensive. Enormously expensive, more expensive than any other campaign has ever been able to afford. You know, one of the reasons why at the local level, everyone goes, you know, we talk to people and they go, oh, well, President Obama did that. And we go, President Obama had $1 billion to do this stuff. We don't. So we're going to do the best that we can.
Did you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, except that if you literally look on a what does it cost to drive to get a particular voter out to the polls, it's not a fair fight. That is on a sort of per voter basis. It is that field operation, that voter contact operation, that makes a lot more sense.
Hold on. I want to get to, it looks like Jeff from Mount Airy to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. How are
hi.
You?
Good. How are you?
Okay. I'd like to submit that while I am 100% in favor of reform of these laws, that sometimes qualifications trump money raising. For example, your last guest, Terry Gillen, she has a wide reputation for being aggressive, abusive to employees.
Whoa, 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 whoa! You can't just make those comments on the air.
Okay, well, I've talked to
Sorry.
Many people.
No, that's not what we are talking about. I'm not going to let you say something, especially that Terry Gillen cannot respond to. So we're going to move on. Jeff, thanks for the call to Radio Times. But he does talk about qualifications. And I guess the question is, how do you get good qualified candidates under any kind of system? Dave?
Competition. I mean, I look at this as like we ought to open as wide as we can. There's no educational cutoff, no background, no professional. Like we need to give people a sense that this is open and accessible to any citizen of Philadelphia who meets the minimum qualifications. And then, if you have an open and competitive process played out on a level playing field, we have to hope that in the long run we get better candidates and better quality of folks serving in government.
What do you think, Dan?
Well, I think that, again, it goes back a little bit to the ideology versus reality, which is right now it's hard to argue that we have a particularly strong mayoral field. We certainly have some very strong candidates, but one of the leading candidates, signed up for the drop payment. I mean, that's, someone like Terry, who has decades of experience, had to drop out, but we still have sort of a leading candidate who was in the drop program. Like, this is how weak the field is. There are some strong candidates, but overall it's not. And I just want to go back to – I think the real important thing is that 9 of the district city council people who are running for reelection, only one has a competitive primary, and that's because the person's self-funding. You know, WHYY wrote a story a little while ago. You want better city government? Get different council.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've set up a system in which it sort of doesn't work. And I 100% agree that, we should have all of these open and fair and honest things. What I'm saying is that the system we currently have is preventing that. I would like to add my voice to trying to fix that. And I think that we can't cut off the source of funds which allows a more even playing field without getting rid of the other hurdles.
But I mean, maybe the problem is whatever the pipeline is to elective office is damaged. It doesn't inspire the right kind of people. There aren't mentors for the right kind of people to run for office.
Well, I would say I would go back to the 15 people who called me this spring, who were some really interesting, talented people. And they all wanted to run. They were all set to run. They would have brought real interesting perspective and talent to the race. And they all said no because they couldn't raise the money. Mm. I 100% agree with you. We should have this system. But this is the system we have. I think we need to fix it.
Let me get looks like John from Camden joining us on Radio Times. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead, John.
Oh, this whole thing really revolves around money, of course.
Yes.
And the responsibility of the Federal Communications Commission is to keep money out of the game. But in every election game in the country, money is the predominant factor. If you don't have money, you can't advertise. You can't get elected. What needs to be done is the Federal Communications System has to say, look, you get enough signatures on your application to run, and you've got so much time. And cut out all this political advertising, which makes you sick to watch it. You sit at dinner, and you watch people going on and on and on about the terrible, crazy stuff that they advertise so that they can get elected.
All right. Well, and John, you know, let me take your point. And I mean, easier said than done, David Thornburgh. I mean, how do you get money out of this?
Well, it's an endless pursuit, you know, and it's not a once and done. You know, one thing I would say, I mean, you know, we're really focused right now on sort of this really interesting generational opportunity that I think we have in Philadelphia, which a lot of cities have, which we've got a very active, energized, engaged kind of 25 to 35-year-old crowd. That's the future of the city. And the question is, you know, can we build a pipeline of people? Take the 10 or 15 folks that have talked to Dan and multiply that by, you know, five or six. And what is it going to take to sort of run effective, maybe lower money campaigns? I mean, I think this is an intriguing proposition. Like maybe, you know, if you said, I only have $500,000, you know, to there's no magic number, by the way, on how much it costs to run a race. You know, it kind of comes and goes, and it is have a lot to do with the rules of the game.
I mean, Dan, one of the arguments for the voters sort of turn off, I mean, people not going to the polls, is that they don't like campaigns. They don't like turning on their television and seeing sort of a wall of ads that are just ripping another candidate apart.
Well, so that's another thing that you often hear. But, you know, there's nothing nastier than the presidential campaigns. And there's no higher turnout. You know, so, I mean, there's a big argument to be made that people say that stuff, but they probably weren't going to vote anyway. There's sort of a truism in politics. If you call somebody and they say, I'm not going to vote anymore because you keep calling me, they weren't going to vote. They're just looking for an excuse. But turnout in the presidential campaigns is huge. Can't be nastier than that.
But again, I mean, it's because you're voting for the most powerful person in the country.
Right, but the
Don't
argument
you think that's
was that
the reason that people turn out to vote.
Well, but you know, the argument was that these ads were turnoffs. They're clearly not. You know, there are issues. But what I'd say is that, you know, there is more coverage. But there's simply, and you know, other people can speak to this better than I. But there simply is no better way to communicate to a large group of people than television. Simple example. If Coca-Cola thought that newspaper articles was going to get people to buy their product, they wouldn't run television commercials. It's the same as campaigns.
We're almost out of time here, David. But this was an effort, you know, almost 10 years ago to address the problem of pay to play. Perhaps looks like it might have solved at least some of that problem. But as you both have been saying, and now perhaps it's time to revisit this and look at either problems that have cropped up because of that or just the changing campaign financial landscape.
Yeah, it's always time to revisit this. Again, this is not a once and done, tie a boat on it, glad we took care of all the problems. You solve one problem, you open the door for others. And, you know, I think this ought to be a spirited debate, not just around, you know, a couple months before an election, but, and this is the kind of stuff that, you know, these are core values for 70, so, you know, let's let the games begin and keep them going.
But is there anything that can be done between now and the May primary, for instance?
No,
you're saying
not
no?
really. I mean, it's, you know, campaigns take on a life of their own. It attracts competitive people. They want to beat the other person. And we all only, you know, owe it to ourselves and to the process to sort of pay attention. But the good news is there are a lot more people sort of feeding the stream that will help us pay attention.
Do you agree with that, Dan?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to do between now and the primary, you know, other than to try and force the candidates to talk about it and how they would make the system open and more fair. I mean, I read the Committee of 70's agenda, integrity agenda, and that's a great starting point. I would go a little further. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that has to be part of the discussion, which is, you know, I think it's pretty broken right now. We need to fix it.
And going further from your perspective is tossing people in prison? I mean, really, like,
well,
enforcing the laws that we have?
Well, so there are two things. One is that, you know, if corruption is the problem, we should increase penalties for corruption. Just giving money is not necessarily a bad thing unless it's tied to that corruption. Let's focus on the corruption.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Ballot Talks on Radio Times. Dan Fee, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Head of the Democratic political consulting firm called the Echo Group. And David Thornburgh, thank you very much as well.
My pleasure.
And he's the CEO of the Government Reform Group here in Philadelphia called Committee of 70. And we also spoke with Terry Gillen, former candidate for mayor of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.
Thank you.